Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. Why is it that so many people suspect that American agriculture has been on the wrong track? And perhaps a more important question is, why are so many people increasingly believing that change is beginning to happen that points American agriculture and our entire food system in a better direction? Well, some credit should go to our guest on Farm to Table Talk, John Eichard. John was raised on a farm and spent half of his career working in support of ever larger scale agriculture, industrialization. And then he awakened to the idea that he'd been totally wrong and did a U-turn, dedicating his time and his effort to promoting sustainable food systems. He's written books, blogs, and given speeches spreading the word of his vision for a better way forward. I've heard him speak, and listeners should try to hear his important message directly. Today, John Eichard is going to share his perspective with us on Farm to Table Talk. John, you did grow up on a farm, and after your education, you were teaching farmers to become ever larger and more specialized. But midway in your career, you changed your mind.
Yes. As you said, I grew up on a farm, and I had an opportunity to go to the University of Missouri back in those days when, you know, somebody of modest intelligence and very little income could go to their state university. But anyway, I had an opportunity to go there, and agricultural economics just kind of hit me as something that I really thought that I wanted to learn more about. And so I got my BS and MS and eventually my PhD degrees in agricultural economics. But when I got out of the university then, I got a job, and I worked for actually 30 years at four universities as a agricultural economist. But the first half of that academic career, I was a livestock marketing specialist out here working in extension as well as teaching and doing research with farmers and trying to help them make marketing decisions. But I basically taught what I had been taught in graduate school, and it made sense to me, is that our job was to help make agriculture more efficient. We were going to help farmers find ways to become more efficient, to reduce the cost of production. And not only would it be good for those farmers that followed our advice and reduced their cost, it'd be more profitable for them. But the bigger issue was is that what we were going to do is make good food affordable for everyone. So it was a kind of a social public mission. It was public institutions. And I really believed that, you know. I thought we can make agriculture more efficient. We'll bring down the cost of production on the farms. It'll bring down food costs. And then everybody will be able to afford enough good food for healthy, active lifestyles, which we call food securities. But at the middle of the 1980s, I really began to question that, and that was the time I still refer to as the farm financial crisis. And the route that we had chosen to make farm more efficient is what I now call industrialization. It was specialized, move away from diversified farms, specialized in particular crops or livestock in these particular phases of the operation, specialize, standardize, use pesticides, fertilizers, various other things, make the farm work like a factory without a roof, you know, specialize, standardize the whole process. And then once you've done that, you can simplify and routinize so that you simplified the management process so you consolidate into larger and larger farming operations. So that's what we've been doing. And during the 1970s then, which was a profitable time in agriculture, and we were expanding to produce for expanding global markets, which we so-called experts thought would go on forever because it's going to take us a long time to feed the world. So we encouraged farmers during the 70s to leverage the land values in particular and borrow money if they had to expand to get larger so that they could become even more efficient. And then we got into the 1980s, a domestic recession, a global recession, agricultural export markets dried up, commodity prices fell, and we had farmers caught with huge debts at record high interest rates because of the inflation of that time. And we just had foreclosures and bankruptcies. And I moved from Oklahoma to Georgia about that time. We had several farmers commit suicide there. And so I had to look around and say, look, this isn't working. It sure isn't working for the farmers that I thought I was trying to help. It isn't working for the rural communities that I thought was going to benefit from having a prosperous farm economy. And then only then did I realize, you know, it wasn't working from an environmental or ecological standpoint, that with agricultural chemicals and pesticides, we were polluting the air and water. We were eroding the soils, farming fence row to fence row, tear out the fence rows. You know, that's what we'd said to do, get bigger, get out. I said, I can't do this anymore. This is not what I got my education for. And what I would say now, this is not sustainable. We can't continue to do this, so I have to do something different.
There's almost no way you could make it work. Well, they couldn't make it work.
Right. Right, and that's what happened. And then, you know, it took me some time later on, it took me several years, I decided that's when I changed over and started focusing on what became sustainable agriculture. That was kind of the beginning of what I call the modern sustainable agriculture movement. And the more I learned about it, the more sense it made, because sustainable agriculture, I still kind of refer to it as a balanced approach to farming. And in the early, in the 1940s and 50s at the University of Missouri, that had what they called a balanced farming program. And it's very much like sustainable agriculture. It says, you know, that the farm family needs to balance the need to make a living, the economic dimension of agriculture, with the quality of farm life, with providing conveniences in the home. At that time, we were talking about helping farmers get indoor plumbing and washing machines and things of that nature, and heat, and you know, to improve the quality of life of the family, not just about the farm and income of the family. And then also conservation. That's when we were putting in terraces and talking about soil conservation, land conservation. And I could see that what we had done is we become preoccupied with the economics, and the quality of life was being diminished and suffering. We weren't talking about how many people were going to be able to keep on farms and what's going to be the quality of life of farmers living in rural communities, viable rural communities, and taking care of the land. You know, we'd basically kind of given up on that dimension. So sustainable agriculture to me was just about balancing those things, and it made a lot of sense. But later on, it would dawn on me, you know, that we had justified this whole kind of experiment. And many of us economists really for many years rationalized the farmers being forced off of the farms. We said, okay, they're just finding better opportunities in the city. They're not really, because we kind of justified what was happening to farms in rural communities as saying, okay, we're making food more affordable for people, and so there's some greater kind of social good that's coming out of all this. But I determined later that simply wasn't true. We have a higher percentage of people in this country that are classified as food insecure or hungry today than we had back in the 60s when CBS did its special on hunger in America in 1967. The estimates were that about 5% of the people in the U.S. were classified as hungry or food insecure. And now it's about 17% of the children in this country, and I think it's about 13% of the total population is classified as food insecure. And that means that they don't have enough, not sure that they're going to have enough food to get them through the month until they get the next paycheck or they get the next welfare check or whatever it is they're waiting on. So I just think, you know, we did all of this thinking that we were going to address this problem of food security, and it didn't work. And then that's another thing that made sustainable agriculture so attractive to me, and that's what I'm going to be talking about in this conference that's coming up out in California, is the idea of sustainable agriculture. If you take it seriously, it's about meeting the needs of all in the present. You know, not everything anybody wants, but everything anybody needs, and doing it in such a way that it doesn't diminish opportunities for those of the future. And so I could see that the agriculture we created wasn't even meeting the needs of many people in this country in the present. And when I looked at what we were doing in terms of soil erosion, pollution to the air, the water, we certainly were not leaving equal or better opportunities for our children and our grandchildren beyond that. And if you look at what we've done to rural communities in terms of the economies and the quality of life there, you know, we're not leaving better opportunities for people that choose to live their life in the country. So I just had to change and go a different direction, and sustainability to me seemed like the direction that I thought I could spend the rest of my career pursuing.
The term sustainability, is it in fact sustainable? I mean, is that the right way to capture what the system we should have?
Yeah, you know, that's been a question ever since the beginning, back in the late 80s, you know, 88, 89, when I first got involved in it. There was a lot of question, well, what should we call this? And originally, the USDA program is called low-input sustainable agriculture. So they got in, well, we'll reduce inputs. And then it's been, I call it used and abused and intentionally misused and the various other things over the years since then. I think approaches such as regenerative agriculture and organic agriculture and biodynamic and holistic resource management, these are all different specific means or approaches or systems of trying to create an agriculture, or permaculture is another, nature farming. It's means of trying to create a kind of agriculture that will meet the needs of the people as farmers, but at the same time, we'll also take care of the land, that will regenerate the natural resources, conserve the natural resources, leave something for future generations, and leave the land as productive as you found it, which used to be kind of the rural or farming ethic that was strongly entrenched whenever I was growing up in rural communities. You had a responsibility to leave the land as productive as when it was passed to you. And then also an agriculture that provides employment for people, a desirable quality of life that, you know, that provides a good way of life, which is what traditional family farming was always about, as well as a way to make an economic living. And so I think all of those are kind of, that take sustainability seriously or take what they're doing seriously, are different approaches to try to create a sustainable agriculture. Now, I think many of the sustainability programs, particularly of the large corporations and agribusiness and so on, are simply trying to redefine sustainability in a way that fits their ongoing business model rather than taking it seriously.
Back in the early 80s, when a lot of this started shifting, the problem was that the farmers were going broke.
When we created that industrial system, it just kept going to where you had to become larger and larger and more specialized and more standardized. That was kind of built in to that overall process, which meant there were going to be opportunities for fewer and fewer farmers within that system. And so when you went to the sustainable agriculture then, it meant you had to change the whole system, that you had to find new markets, and that's when we began to see the growth in the farmers markets and the CSAs and the other alternative means of finding customers that wanted something different than what they could get in the supermarket. And I still say that's what makes a sustainable agriculture operation economically viable, is to find some way to access a market where people are willing to pay higher prices for a product that has the ecological and social integrity, you know, as well as the quality. And that's why we saw the growth in the organic markets, and that's the reason we're seeing the growth in the local food markets and so on, is that there's an increasing number of people that are willing to pay premium prices to get food that's produced in the way that they want it produced. And that's kind of the future. The Hartman report, which is a big report that the retailers, natural food retailers, all rely on, they consistently show that about a third of the American consumers is looking for something fundamentally different than they're finding in the supermarkets and the fast food places, and are willing to pay premium prices for it. You know, it may be grass-based, humanely raised, organic, natural, a whole range of different things, cage-free, crate-free, things of this nature. But there's a significant market out here for something that's different. The key is to link the people that are willing to pay the premium prices with the farmers that can produce and are willing to produce that kind of product.
I'm curious, as you have gone around and you've spoken to groups about the future and about, you know, getting on a better track of sustainability, what's different and maybe more important, what's similar about how they're approaching the issue in the various regions of the country?
Well, I think there are distinct differences. I think you can find people that kind of share the vision that I'm talking about in all the areas of the country. I think every state in the union now has something that you could call a sustainable agriculture program of some type, either at the university or a grassroots program or something. So there's everywhere, but the movements are much stronger in certain areas of the country. And I would identify the areas kind of like from Northern California, Washington, Oregon, in the Northwest, and then in the Northeast, in the whole kind of New England area, NOFA, Northeast Organic, Organic Farmers Association, I guess is NOFA. But they have various state organizations up there. and then Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, Minnesota, these are areas. And I think it relates as much as anything to kind of the historic culture of those areas. For one thing, the people in like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota, those areas tend to be more of the Scandinavian countries, a more cooperative kind of thing, more community-based, more, you know, kind of concerned about the well-being of the community and the well-being of the whole. And I just think, you know, I don't have any other explanation for it, but I do know that the movement kind of is stronger in some areas than it is in others. It's probably a little stronger in Iowa than it is in Missouri. And the farther south you go, I think that you probably have less strength in the movement overall.
I run into people out here in California that might have gone to school and got an MBA and worked in Silicon Valley and decided it's not all it's cracked up to be and don't want the commute and everything, and they decide what they'd really love to do is be a farmer. Oftentimes those people have zero experience. They don't know a farmer, but they've been drawn to it. Do you notice that when you go to different areas of the country, that you run into those kind of audiences, those with a tradition and those that have absolutely no history?
Yeah, I do, and there's a lot of people kind of come back to the farm, or they maybe when they were growing up, their grandparents' farm or something like that. But I think what draws them back is kind of the focus on the quality of life. In some places, it's a quality of life that they never really gave up, you know. It's several generations of farming, it's ingrained in the culture, and they want to recreate that. They feel that somehow it's, you know, they've been pulled away from it by this industrialization that I've talked about. And then in other cases, it's people that get wrapped up in the industry, which is just to focus on, you know, kind of the economic bottom line again. You know, work as long hours as you can, earn as much as you can, climb the corporate ladder as fast as you can. And they say, this is, you know, I may be making a lot of money, but it's not the kind of life I want to live. And I think the most optimistic thing to me, most hopeful, if not optimistic, would be what you referred to as the millennials. There's just a lot of young people at the conferences that I go to now, young families, and many of them have been out here farming for 10 or 15 years, and they're still there, and they're still coming, and there's more of them coming to the meetings all the time. And there's, you know, people come in that want to farm, but they're the people that are most effective in talking to them are not old people like me. It's the young farmers that are out here and that are making these things work that are on the programs. And so, you know, that's really hopeful. And I think the, you know, the every generation is diverse. They tend to get identified as having certain characteristics like the millennials. But I think there's a big segment of the millennials that are basically saying, well, you created an economy and a world that's not going to be sustainable for us, and we want to create something that's fundamentally better. And there's just a lot of those that are saying we want to be farmers, and I think that's really hopeful for the future.
Well, when you get ready to stand up before a group of people that think they want to be farmers or they're just getting started, what goes through your mind? I mean, what do you think they want to hear from you?
Well, I think they want to hear the truth. I hope that's what, or at least my truth as I say what it is. And I tell them to begin with that if you want to be a sustainable farmer, I can't think of anything that's more physically, intellectually, or emotionally demanding as an occupation than farming, than being out here and making a living on an organic farm or what I would call a sustainable farm, where you really have to understand what's going on in the soil and how the crops and the plants relate to the health of the soil and the crop rotations and integrating livestock and cropping systems and dealing with customers and finding markets. And, you know, it's a really intellectually and physically demanding occupation. That's what I tell them up front. And basically I tell young farmers, unless you feel that farming is your calling, unless you feel that this is what you're really here for, if this isn't your purpose in life, then you probably ought to be looking for something else. You could still be involved in the local food movement and not be a farmer. But if you want to be a farmer, then you really need to feel that this is just what I have to do with my life. And I said, if you really feel that way and are willing to put in the, you know, the time and effort to learn it and understand how difficult it is, then that's what you ought to do, because that's the only thing you'll ever be happy doing, is doing what you really feel that you in your heart that you're meant to do. And there's a quote that I have that I quote a young farmer that's been farming for 10 or 15 years, and she goes through three or four different points about how difficult it is and how much work it is and how dangerous it is and how much money it takes. And then she says, it's the best life I could ever have dreamed of living. And then goes ahead and talks about the rewards of knowing that she's doing something that's really making a contribution, that she's doing it in a way that she really feels good about.
John, I know a lot of large farms that have really pride themselves and be a sustainable too, and try to find places in their operation for people to be farmers part of a larger company. Do you see room for them in the tent? They're not small. They're not starting. They may have lots of acreage, but what part of your message can connect, you know, with them?
Well, I've often said farm size does matter, and it matters because sustainable agriculture is much more management intensive, kind of like I've just described about how intellectually demanding it is and challenging it is. It requires more management per acre or dollar invested than industrial agriculture. Industrial agriculture works because it requires less management. That's the reason the farms are bigger, is because there's management's been simplified and you can have fewer people managing more land, and more cattle, and more money. So the question is then for the large farmer, is it's going to have to be management intensive if it's a large farm and it's sustainable. And the way I put it, you know, is large farms aren't unsustainable because they're large. It's just that most large farms are large because they're unsustainable. And that doesn't mean that a large farm can't be managed sustainably. In fact, I just returned from a trip to Brazil where I was on a cattle farm, we would call a ranch, that was 10,000 acres, that I think from an ecological standpoint was being managed very sustainably. But they had that farm broken out into nine different sections, and then the cattle that were there were kind of the Zebu Nilor cattle, but the Zebu kind of like the Brahma. But the herds then were like 30 cow herds with one bull, and then they would have cowboys with each of those herds. And so it was a very large farm, but the way that the animals were treated and the way they were handled and the way they were matched to the carrying capacity of the land and the needs of the cattle to the needs of the land and the way they were managed would have been very much like a large number of small ranching operations. And so, you know, I think that's the key. If you've got a large operation, it's going to have to be managed in such a way that you're fitting what you're doing on the farm to the different places on the farm, and you're providing opportunities for more people to make a living on that farm, and it has to be ecologically sound, socially responsible, and then economically viable over the long run. Those are kind of the key dimensions of the balanced farming. And it's not that you can't do that on a big farm. It's just that most big farms are big because they're specialized, standardized, consolidated, simplified management, routinized management. It's just not sustainable.
You know, John, I want to go all the way to the end consumer now, and then we'll swing back to the farmers one more time.
Okay.
But for consumers that say, I like what you're saying, I'm not going to farm myself, but I would like to support that type of agriculture, what do I do? What do I do as a consumer and the decisions I make when I go out to eat at a restaurant or go shopping for groceries? How do I support the kind of agriculture that you're describing?
Well, I think it's easier now by far to find somebody within your local area that's producing, that's willing to provide food for local consumers. And I think that's where to start. There's directories in most of the places, or you can go to a farmer's market. You can make contacts at the farmer's markets. Or you can go to, like, an extension office. In most places, we'll have a directory of people that sell food direct to local customers. And so I think that's the place to start. You can go and you know, find local restaurants that advertise as having, you know, buying from local farmers. And I would think the thing to do there is when you go in, then ask them, you know, where does this product come from? Where does this steak come from? Where does this salad come from? You know, make sure that it isn't just kind of greenwashing. They aren't just using it to sell the product or sell the idea. But I think it's easier to find people now that are willing to sell locally and able to sell locally. or go on the internet and, you know, search for local foods and put in your area, and you'll probably come up with websites there that will have lists of farmers that are selling locally. That was a real challenge early on, but I think it's becoming easier now.
Well, we've talked about the consumer and how they might look for it, and we've talked about the farmers and how they might grow the product. Let's talk just a minute or two about those that might be listening right now. They're in a terrible commute. They sort of wish they could become farmers, and they're listening to us talk while they're in a traffic jam, and they go an hour one way and then an hour back right to a job that they think is kind of a soul-sucking job. And they're thinking, I wish I could do this. I mean, what message do you have to them if they're thinking, boy, that sounds like something I'd want to do? How could they take it to the next stage?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that that everybody that's discouraged with their commute necessarily needs to be a farmer. But I think what that's a reflection of is, to me, that they're into a way of life. They got trapped into a way of life for economic reasons. That's not making them very. It's not very rewarding for them, and it's not making them very happy at this point. And I would encourage them, you know, to say, okay, I need to think very seriously about what it is that I really want to do. What is it I'm good at? Where's my passion? You know, what would make me feel good about how I live and how I work and what I do? And that's basically what I did in the middle of my career. I said, I'm at a point where I don't feel good about what I'm doing. I don't feel good about what I've been teaching and what I've been taught, and I have to find something else that moves me in a different direction. It was a major change for me, and it may be a major change for people that are commuting. And some of those people may find that they're going to end up being farmers, or they'll end up, you know, being involved in this local food movement in some sense, if that's what really seems to interest them. That's probably something, I call it kind of the quiet voice within, that's kind of nudging them to go in a particular direction. But you kind of have to continue to follow that. But I agree, if you really find what your purpose is in life, and that's what I tell young farmers, then there'll be some way that you will be able to make that, work that out and make that happen, because it wouldn't make any sense for us to be given a life that we're supposed to live that we can't live. You know, that's impossible.
John, it seems to me you found your purpose in life.
I think I have. That's the reason I continue to do it. And when it doesn't seem that way anymore, then I've learned enough from experience, then I would kind of move myself in a different direction if what I was doing didn't feel good to me and didn't feel right. And one thing I wanted to add, we were talking about the word sustainability. I'm kind of fighting the end of a cold here, my voice is breaking up a little bit. But you know, this word sustainability, I kind of heard that back early on, 1988, and I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., and Bob Rodale was there, Rodale Institute. He was killed in a car accident in Russia later on, but he was one of the early leaders in this, and he got up and talked about sustainability. He says, sustainability is the big question. He says, it's the big question. I say it's the defining question of this century. It's how can we meet the needs of all without diminishing opportunities for the future? And the reason people don't want to deal with sustainability directly, and I think there's a lot of people that distort it intentionally, it's because when we ask ourselves honestly and truly and factually, with all the information we can pull together, can we continue doing what we're doing? Is it sustainable? Then I think the honest answer is no. When you look at our economy, our society, and, you know, how we're pushing for endless sort of economic growth and population growth and the use of fossil energy, depletion, energy and pollution, a whole range of things, which I won't go through, you come to the idea that it's not, what we're doing is not sustainable. And when you reach that point, and that relates to us individually, driving back and forth to work or being in the occupation that doesn't fit, if it's not sustainable, then that says that you have to change. And that's what a lot of people don't want to do. And I think another thing that's important about sustainability is the fact that it's being abused and misused. Actually, I think indicates some reflection of its importance, some reflection of just how big an issue it is. And I relate it to the concept of love. And I can't think of any word that's more misused, abused, and put to all kinds of uses that it was never intended than the word love, but we all kind of know what it is, and we all kind of know that it's important. And so we continue to use it, and we continue to refer to it, and it continues to guide us in spite of all of the misuse and abuse and argument about what it does and doesn't mean. And I think that's the kind of word sustainability is. It's the defining issue, the defining question, I think, of this century.
Do you post on your website upcoming presentations that you're going to be making?
Yes, on my website, johneichert.com. And I meant to mention, I just posted a blog on my website about the farm I managed to, visited in Brazil, the big farm that I said, you know, can a big farm be sustainable? I just posted that on my website, but I also post on my website the upcoming speaking engagements that I have.
And I've heard you speak. And you take time to answer questions, too. So you answer questions at the end, and they'll get a chance to visit with you a little bit, or they may just be visiting your website at first. John, I think we're all fortunate to have you as a crusader and glad you have this passion that you do and spreading the word. And I want to thank you for being on Farm to Table Talk.
Well, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here and kind of share my message with the people, because as you say, I've concluded that's kind of what my purpose is in life, so I always appreciate the opportunity to carry that out to the extent that I can. So I know that I've heard of your program before, and I know you have a lot of people that are listening in, so it's really an honor for me to be with you.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.